Hey there, truth seekers. It is I, Brad Friedman. No, I'm not Mike. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, drafted into duty here tonight at the last minute for Mike. Out here, we're broadcasting live from the left coast in beautiful downtown Burbank. If you don't know me, I'm Mike's regular fill-in guy. You may know me from bradblog.com. And I read this today on mikemalloy.com. The headline is Sickening. Welcome, Truth Seekers. Maybe it was the thought of the new Congress, or the sight of Nancy Pelosi kissing Orange Crush yesterday, holding that great big gavel, but Mike has fallen ill and will not be live tonight. Now, see, I think that was an unfortunate wording. He will not be live on the air tonight. He will be live tonight. He's doing just fine. But she goes on to say, in all seriousness, we think it is food poisoning. So please enjoy Brad Friedman as he fills in for Mike tonight. Blah, blah, blah. Mike returns live to the 10th. I think that means on the 10th to report on the antics of our brave new Congress. So he'll be back. He'll be resting tonight and tomorrow, and we'll join you again on Monday. Until then, you got me. I'm delighted to be here. Glad you could join us. We are, as I say, live, and we're going to be talking about the brave new Congress here ourselves, because, you know, it's kind of really funny. It's much funnier, in my opinion. Maybe it's just me. You could correct me if I'm wrong about this. I think it's way funnier when Republicans are in charge. Now, yes, of course, there is that whole death and destruction thing and gutting Social Security and ruining the nation as we know it. But you got to look on the bright side. They're much funnier. This reading of the U.S. Constitution today, funny. That was funny. But I'll tell you about something else that happened with a couple of the congressmen who forgot to get sworn in yesterday before they went around and voted on stuff all day today. Whoops! Little constitutional issue there. But yeah, no, it's much fun. When Democrats are in charge, it's just sad. It's just depressing because when they don't do what they should, it's frustrating. It makes you angry. But when the Republicans are there, I'm broadcasting here from Stephanie Miller's studio in Los Angeles. And I came in and there's a Christmas card, New Year's card, something like that, holiday card. Sitting here from someone, I can't even read who it's from, but it's got a picture of John Ashcroft on the front in front of the Spirit of Justice statue. Remember that? Remember that? He later would order that drapes be placed around in front of the naked statue because it was just too obscene, this Spirit of Justice statue that had been at the Justice Department for I don't know how many decades. It's funny. It's funny. You got to laugh. You have to. Otherwise, you will weep and you will cry. And I just, might do that if I'm not careful. So tonight, our phone numbers, tonight and tomorrow night, our phone numbers will be 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. It's not the usual Malloy number. It is ours, 877-520-1150. As I say, write it down because they called me at the last minute, so I got nothing to talk about. So if you want to get in on the show, yes, I do. Yeah, not really. So if you want to get in on the show tonight, you can give us a call throughout the evening at that hour, at that phone number. David Dayan of Fire Dog Lake, the great news blogger from over there, will be joining us momentarily to talk about some of the goings on in the Congress today and about this filibuster reform, this first long day of the U.S. Senate and how they pull this off. Yes, they met yesterday, convened yesterday. That would be the first day of Congress. But somehow, the first day of Congress is going to stretch all the way to January 24, at least, because they met yesterday. And I guess now they take off 2 weeks in the Senate. It's a nice gig if you can get it. No wonder everyone wants to be a senator. So somehow the first day of the Senate will continue through at least January 24th. And that's a good thing because they need that first day to continue because that's the only way that they can actually change rules in the U.S. Senate is on the first day that they convene. Yeah. Are you surprised? Tony's looking at me going, what? Yeah, that's how they do it. So it's only on the first day can they actually change the rules. But oddly enough, they can make the first day go as long as they want to. And I actually had David Dayen on the air yesterday on another show I do out here on Pacifica on Wednesdays. And he explained, and we'll be able to go into a little bit more detail. He explained that there was one year that the first day of the U.S. Senate went all the way until July. I wonder if that's going to happen this year, because that's the only time they can change the rules in the Senate. And as we know, this filibuster has been a nightmare, has been abused, out and out abused by the Republicans. It's the rules, so they can do it, but it's obnoxious. It has never been done before. They have made history the amount of times they have invoked this filibuster. And of course, no longer is it Mr. Smith goes to Washington. They don't have to stay up there and talk forever. They just have to say, I'm filibustering. And then that's it. And okay, we need 60 votes to shut it down. So there may be some changes in those rules, and Democrats have put forward a proposal to change those rules that, again, must be done on the first day of Congress, even if that first day takes a year. So we're going to talk to David Dayen about those proposed changes, some new news from the proposal that we heard a bit about yesterday. So there's some new news there, some new changes, of course, in the House rules. Our fiscal conservatives, how do they get away with calling themselves? I know how they get away with calling themselves fiscal conservatives. Because the rest of the media falls for it, and they say, oh, Republicans, they're conservative. No, they're not. If they were conservatives, they would not have changed once again the rules that the Democrats put in place for pay-as-you-go, otherwise known as pay-go. Which means if you want to pay for a new program, you have to figure out how it has to be paid for. You either have to increase taxes somehow, which, of course, Democrats won't do because they're scared to do that. Or close loopholes in another way, cut spending somewhere or another to pay for these measures. Republicans, on the other hand, they've changed the rules once again. No longer do you need to pay as you go. Now they call it cut-go or go-cut or I don't know what the hell they call it. But you don't have to pay as you go. What you have to do is you have to cut as you go. You actually have to cut programs. You can't increase taxes. You can actually cut taxes even though it increases the deficit. And those are exempt from the new cut-go rules. Crazy, huh? All right. Well, we're going to talk to David Dayen about that in a bit, but let's see if we can, shall we get some calls? Let me get some calls. We've got some folks coming in. Let's take one real quick before we take a break, and then we will come back to David Dayen. Richard in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. You got another winter storm heading your way, I'm told.
No, Brad, don't remind me,
please. All right. Sorry.
All right. 6 inches, but I'm hoping that maybe we're going to get lucky anyway.
Here's what you got to do. Wait till the governor. You just got to keep an eye on the governor's travel agenda.
I want to talk to you about Batman and Jake over there.
He's heading out, if he's heading south, it's time to take cover in New Jersey.
I wish he was heading south and not returning, but that's wishful thinking. Brad, I'm over here right now watching C-SPAN, watching it. I think the Democrats are going to get a little fighting this time. Harry Reid's out addressing right now a live press conference about how they really intend to fight back with the stupidity after the CBO came out this morning and said that repealing this would cost $230 billion in the first 10 years and over $1 trillion in the next 10 years.
Repealing, so people understand, $230 billion is what the CBO says it will cost if they repeal health care, which, of course, they won't. It's a whole symbolic thing. But the amusing thing was John Boehner, who comes and says, well, that's their opinion.
That was the thing that I noticed. Yeah. They did the replay of that earlier before they went back to the live thing.
That's
now.
Their opinion. The CBO's opinion, the guys who do this for a living, that's just their opinion.
As opposed to the opinion of the health care providers that they're the shield, the Republicans are the shields for, who say that we're going to make it nice for everybody, especially what Dreyer said, really I got a laugh out of Dreyer talking about the medical savings accounts once again. I mean, if they don't realize how absurd that sounds, that people who can't even afford premiums or inflated premiums for health insurance, if they can't even get in the first place, are going to be able to save enough money to pay for medical bills when they arrive.
Well, look, they don't care. It's all about putting on a show. They're putting on a show for the Tea Party. That's all it's about. It's kind of an amusing show. Hey, Richard, thanks for the call. I got to get to a break.
Good night, Brad. Good. Thanks for letting me talk.
You bet. Thank you, brother. Stay safe and warm out there. Okay, coming back with David Dayan of Fire Dog Lake. Going to talk about the wild and the wacky first day of Congress and so much more. Brad, in for Mike Malloy.
In a little cabaret in a South Texas border town sat a boy and his guitar, and the people came from all around and all the girls.
Yeah, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, and I had forgotten to mention the bradblog.com chat room when I was introducing the show in the previous segment. I'm glad I did, because we had screwed it up. It's now fixed. So those people who are calling and sending emails, yes, the chat room is open. You might want to refresh the page, but you should be able to get in there. Desi Doyen, your lovely chat room hostess tonight, should be in there. My apologies to everybody who, I'll just say Desi screwed it up. It was her fault. She screwed it up. It wasn't me. Okay, let's go to... What? I know she's right there. She can hear. She's listening to... I know. I'm in trouble. All right. Anyway, let's go to David Dayan, our friend from Fire Dog Lake, the great news blogger from Fire Dog Lake. You can read his stuff at news.firedoglake.com. And Dave was kind enough to join me at the last minute here when the Malloys called to see if I could do the show. And I talked to him yesterday, and it was so much fun. We're doing it again today. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I'm okay. Well, we had a lot to talk about yesterday, and not nearly enough time to get it all in. And now we have new news on the filibuster. New breaking news. So I want everyone to understand what we are looking at. And we'll have plenty of time tonight. As a matter of fact, since they just called me, I called you, and I got nothing else for the next 3 hours. So you're welcome to stay as long as you want. And there's plenty, good Lord, there's plenty to talk about. So let's talk about this so-called, before we get to the Constitution reading and all that, let's talk about this so-called filibuster reform package that the Democrats are putting forward. I talked in the last segment about the fact that it has to be done on the first day of Congress, but explain how this will actually work, how the first day it doesn't really mean the first day in the U.S. Senate.
Right. So they had the first day of Congress yesterday.
Right.
And when the day wrapped up, they recessed. And it's important to use that nomenclature. They recessed. They did not adjourn the first day, because there's a difference between the definition of a legislative day and the definition of a calendar day, at least in the eyes of the Senate. And so because they recessed, and now they're actually going home for 2 weeks, good work if you can get it.
You're right.
When they come back on the 25th of January, it will be considered in the same legislative day. And this can go on for weeks. If they just continue to recess as opposed to adjourn, They can make it the first legislative day of the session as long as they want. Back in other times when they were trying to do stuff with Senate rules,
yeah,
the first legislative day has gone into March or even June at one point.
So there is precedent for this because...
Yes, it's wacky, but there's precedent.
And it's only in the case of the Senate rules because only in this case do you have to have it done on the first day of proceedings, right?
Yes. I mean, that's the theory that the reformers in the Senate are working off of. They say the Constitution, Article 1, Section 5, and of course we all heard that today.
It was great.
House of Representatives.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the reading today. Yeah.
It says that each chamber of the Senate, the House and the Senate, shall be able to make their own rules, essentially. But the Senate traditionally operates as sort of a continuing body,
mm-hmm.
and they use the old rules from the previous session, they just carry them over to the next session.
Right.
If you try to change those, there are those in the Senate, usually in the minority, who say, well, you can't do that. We're a continuing body, and we're going to filibuster you. There's an appeal that will be made to that part of the Constitution, an appeal to the chair, who will probably be, it will probably be Vice President Biden presiding. And there's precedent for vice presidents or the president of the Senate at the time,
mm-hmm.
saying, that's true. The Constitution says this, and you can change your rules.
Right.
And then that will be objected to, and there will be a motion to table the objection, and that will be on a straight up or down vote. And that is how you change the rules by majority vote and not with a filibuster-proof majority or by 67 votes, which is what you have to do mid-session in order to change the rules.
So
the idea is straight up or down vote to change the rules at the beginning of the session.
Straight up or down vote at the beginning of the session. That beginning of the session, however, could go on
forever.
Forever. All right, well, and it just may, considering what this proposal is. We're going to talk about that proposal, the specifics of it, with David Dayan of Fire Dog Lake. We'll also take your calls. Maybe 877-520-1150. The chat room is open at bradblog.com. Stop on by. Much more straight ahead. Yes, the house was rocking today. If you missed that Spellbinder, that thrilling reading of the U.S. Constitution, I don't know what you were doing. If you were like me, you were probably sleeping. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. Right now, David Dayan of Fire Dog Lake, our pal, is here to talk not about the House, but about their more deliberative friends next door in the Senate, where the first long day could go on forever, allowing the U.S. Senate to change the filibuster rule from the currently 60 votes needed to get cloture, to stop a filibuster, to whatever they may have planned. And because they're Democrat, they put forward a proposal. But because they're Democrats, yeah, it's kind of a lame proposal. It doesn't end the 60 votes, and it actually gives the Republicans a free gift. Is that a good way to describe it before we get into the details, David?
Well, I mean, no.
No?
Yes and no.
Okay.
There is no question that this will not end the 60-vote Senate.
Right.
If a determined minority wants to block legislation, they will still be able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
What this essentially does is two things. On the legislation and nominations that are relatively non-controversial, it provides a faster path to get those done.
Well, wait, now on the legislation that is non-controversial, how do they determine which legislation? I know nominations can be.
Well, on legislation that is essentially, a lot of the Senate is about time. It's about the calendar and there being not enough time to get everything done that comes over from the House. Last year, I think 400 pieces of legislation didn't get over from the House. A lot of that stuff could have just been done pretty quickly. But because of maybe one senator objecting via the unanimous consent rules, they would have essentially had to eat up a week, maybe 2 weeks of floor time.
Mm. Okay.
One of the provisions in this reform package would cut that essentially in half.
So when we're the non-controversial legislation, like naming a post office after someone or other, all of these busy bills
there are a lot of things that have broad bipartisan support,
right.
Even if they have over 60 votes,
mm-hmm.
A determined minority, a very tiny minority, can force what amounts to 2 weeks on the floor. Under this legislation, it would go much, much faster.
And a determined minority, you mean a minority of one, because in the Senate...
As small as a minority of one.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Coburn is famous for, just gumming up the works and things that have literally 98 senators supporting. He will force, long stretches of time on the Senate floor.
And this secret hole business, I mean, this is one thing that I think you felt that it wasn't going to make that much of a difference when we chatted about it yesterday. But
yeah, I don't think it'll make much difference.
You don't?
No.
Well, I do, and here's why I say this. Because, and for folks who don't know, you can put a secret hold on any legislation, right, David? It doesn't.
That's true.
In nomination, any legislation. Mm-hmm. One senator can simply put a hold on it and doesn't have to admit who he is. So we had the, when they were fighting about the 9/11 health care first responders bill, did we know who was originally holding up that legislation?
Yeah, we did. I mean,
it was
Coburn.
Right? Okay. Well, Coburn.
The thing about there are two facets to this.
If you're shameless, it doesn't matter, I guess.
Yeah, and I see no evidence of shame on the part of the Republicans. So, there are two facets to this.
Right.
One is speed up things
mm-hmm.
that can get across the line. The second thing is bring everything else into the light of day. So that's what the premise is behind getting rid of secret holds. Somebody has to own the fact that they're holding up legislation. And the, continuous debate or the talking filibuster or whatever forces, the entity who is filibustering out into the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
They have to keep the floor, hold the floor, and if they don't, cloture will be assumed to be invoked. So, there are two sort of facets to this. One, I don't know necessarily if either are going to make a huge difference, but it seems like they will.
So you've got – so they're getting rid of the secret hold. You can still have the hold, but now you have to put your name on it. And you can still have the filibuster, but now do they have to start actually doing the standing talking filibuster at first or only after a cloture vote has failed?
It would be after a cloture vote. So, the scenario would be that 41 senators or however many senators vote against a piece of legislation. At that point, they move into a time of continuous debates where those who, voted against the legislation,
mm-hmm.
essentially what they said is, we don't want to end debate on this bill. I mean, that's essentially what a filibuster is. It's, you're not enabling
mm-hmm.
the majority to cut off debate.
Right.
All right, let's have the debate, Let's get out there on the floor, and the party who wants to continue this debate can hold the floor and continue the debate. And they essentially have to do that until the Senate moves on to other, pending business.
But they
so there
don't...
really are only two options at that point. One is the majority leader says, all right, we're moving on.
Uh-huh.
If they skillfully hold the floor long enough that the majority leader just doesn't want to deal with it anymore. And the second option is that they stop. And if they stop, cloture is automatically invoked. You don't have to take another vote. Cloture is invoked at that point.
Now, that would be useful in the case of the old-fashioned filibuster where one guy had to stand up there. He couldn't take a break. He couldn't, even take a bathroom break. He had to stay up there until he, passed out or if essentially said, okay, I've had enough. But now they're changing it so that It doesn't have to be one person. They can do tag team now, right?
They could tag team it up and, you know, hold out. But, I mean, the idea is to draw this out into the open. You know, so many times people have no idea that all these things are being filibustered because there's one vote and it's done, and you hear, oh, the DREAM Act didn't pass. Well, the DREAM Act got 55 votes, but it's said to have not passed.
Well, the DREAM Act would have gotten 55 had it come up for a vote, but instead it failed because they didn't get 60 to shut down the filibuster.
So in this new scenario, the people who voted against the DREAM Act would have to hold the floor. And then you can, you know, if you're in the majority, say, look at these people on the floor stopping a perfectly sensible piece of legislation to, you know, get a path to citizenship for people who, for no fault of their own, found themselves in this country at the age of three. You know, I mean, so there's a PR kind of aspect to this where, you know, you're going to see very coordinated campaigns, if this happens, you know, admonishing those who are holding up progress in the United States.
You know, I always thought, and I guess this will be tested if these proposals are passed. We're speaking with David Dayen of Fire Dog Lake. I always thought that one of the reasons that Democrats did not want to force Republicans or, you know, or change the rules to require that a filibuster has to be the old style. You can't just show up and say,
I filibuster.
You actually have to filibuster. You actually have to stay there and keep talking. I always thought that one of the reasons they did not want that to happen was that it could it not, David, work against them in that, well, you're giving all of this free time, you know, big news headlines, such and such is now filibustering, and he or she or they now are going to speak for the next 5, 10, 20 hours, however long it is, on this topic, on C-SPAN, free TV. Is that not potentially a way to rally the cause of the filibusterers?
Potentially, but then it goes into sort of the public opinion machine, you know? And if you, as Democrats, don't think that your ideas are the ones that will win out, you know, stop being Democrats. Yeah, I mean, if you can't figure out how to make someone look silly for obstructing progress on a piece of legislation that you feel strongly enough about, but that you're going to make them stand on the floor for an entire night.
But they don't get to respond. They don't get to respond to these points. They can come out there and do these endless lies as they do. They can talk about how terrible these death panels will be, complete and utter nonsense, and there is no debate on these things unless I am misunderstanding it.
Well,
am I?
I mean, that is a good question. I think that you can engage in a colloquy. I think you can, you know, engage in debate on the floor, ask a question, you know, will the senator yield for a question? And you know, I mean, I think there would be a mechanism for some actual debate to come out of this where the majority gets a say in the matter. But, you know, I mean, the point is right now that it's entirely on the burden of the majority if they wanted to, you know, make a big show of things on the floor in terms of, you know, I mean, we've seen this. We've seen them do an all-night debate, I remember, on Iraq, and they just wanted an up or down vote on it. And it was only Democrats who spoke that entire night, and they got to say their points over and over again. It was a big spectacle. And, you know, it didn't really do much. And they stopped after a day because it was very hard to do. I mean, you know, the Senate's old. They're old people. They're not going to necessarily keep up.
Well,
but, you know, if you're going to put the burden on someone to filibuster, it should be the people filibustering. And that's essentially the principle of this rule change.
Indeed. And, you know, I had mentioned on the Twitters a couple of weeks ago, and as a matter of fact, you can follow me on the Twitters at the Brad blog, and for that matter, you can follow David at D Dayen over there. I had mentioned out there on the Twitters that one of the things that they ought to do in reforming this is also to put the burden on the people who want to keep filibustering by requiring them to have 40 to keep the filibuster going rather than requiring 60 to knock it down. You know, because a lot of these guys say, well, they can, you know, they're never going to stop this filibuster, so I don't even need to show up to work today.
Absolutely. It could be 59-0.
Right.
The vote could be 59-0,
and
it would still fail under the current rules.
And yet that's not one of the things. They're not requiring 40 votes, are they?
Well, funny you should mention that, because Al Franken, Senator Al Franken, today, in addition to co-sponsoring this legislation, the rules package was sort of put together by Tom Udall, Jeff Merkley, and Tom Harkin.
Right.
But Al Franken today, in addition to co-sponsoring that, put together exactly what you said. He put a rule change
in,
that he put forward, so now it's part of sort of this larger debate that they're having, to make it so that you need 41 affirmatively to stop this instead of 60 passively to you know, to break a filibuster.
Good, because I was going to say, I had when I had tweeted that a couple of weeks ago, I got a tweet back from someone who she will not be named unless she wants to call in and name herself, but she said that she touched base with her senator, who she knows well, and the senator wrote back to say that, yeah, that was actually one of the things that they were considering in this package. David, I got to take a quick break.
Sure.
Sit tight there. David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake is joining me, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, talking Senate filibusters, crazy Republicans, and whatever else is on your mind all night tonight. 877-520-1150 if you want to get in a question for David or comment on any of this stuff. 877-520-1150, chat room at bradblog.com, and of course on the Twitters at The Brad Blog. Much more straight ahead, and we're going to find out what are the possibilities of this package, this proposal, for good or bad, actually passing. It's going to be an interesting year. Brad, in for Malloy, much more ahead.
Place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play.
It's got to get to the house part, all right? Here it comes. All right, here it comes.
All right. Long.
Not yet. It's later. Oh, man. All right. Well, see, we were looking for house songs. And oh, here it comes. It's coming. It's still not coming. All right. Well, you know what? It's because there's no Senate songs. We got to play all these house songs. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy.
We rock and roll people.
I know.
Senate songs.
I know there's no Senate songs. If you can think of a Senate song, give us a call. You can give us a call at 877-520-1150. Speaking with David Dayan about the Senate. And actually, I got a call that I may go to here in a second, David. But so let me just close this loop real quick.
Yeah.
The rest of the proposed filibuster reforms that we knew about as of yesterday also include that, after they do get cloture, shut down a filibuster in regard to nominees, instead of 30 hours of debate, because there's really nothing, there's no amendments or anything that you can do with an amendment, that'll change to just 2 hours of debate. But the other thing that the Republicans have been talking about was, the reason they're filibustering is because they won't get any amendments if they don't. Now that will change. This is really a gift to the minority. They are guaranteed amendments in this process now.
Right, and it would happen after cloture is invoked. So it's almost a little carrot to say, well, if you invoke cloture, we will get your amendments onto the floor. There are some potential issues with that. You could have, you know, they have to be germane to the subject at hand, but they could be entire substitutions of the bill. The thing could go a little haywire on the majority. I think that you should have the ability to amend. I don't have a problem with the minority having the right to amend. If people think it's a problem, the piece that they're wanting to put into the bill, they can vote against it.
Can those amendments be subject to filibuster as well?
It doesn't look like it. Because it's post-cloture, it looks like that they would be straight up or down amendments.
All right. So now the question is, will this package, well you said Franken added that you have to have actually 40 or 41 affirmative votes
right.
to keep it going.
I don't know if that's going to make it in, but he put in his separate rules change. You know, there are about four or five of these rules change resolutions kicking around. I think something's going to happen. Mitch McConnell wouldn't even rule out something happening on this today in a press conference. Every single senator on the Democratic side has written a letter saying they want to change the rules. It's just a matter of getting consensus. There is as much consensus around this particular package of rules that changes that we've talked about as any other. There's already at least 26 co-sponsors. You only need 51. So it's highly possible that something gets done. I don't know if it will look exactly like this, but we're moving towards something happening here. And it's not going to be great. I mean, it's not, you know, tomorrow the Senate is not going to be transformed into this wonderful majority vote body. But what it does is the very act of changing the rules, and especially changing them by majority vote, puts the minority on notice and says, you know, you want to screw around again, you want to obstruct every single bill that comes down the pike, you want to do all the games that you want to do, well, we'll just come back here in 2 years and we'll do this all over again.
Hey, David, I got a call, but I'm going to have to wait until after the top of the hour to take this on that you might want to stick around for. I leave it to you. Greg from New Jersey wants to ask a question. It looks like he believes that Sarah Palin is right about death panels. You want to stick around for that, or do you need to take off? I leave it to you.
I can stick around for the next next segment.
All right. We'll give you one segment with David Day. And if you want to get in, now is your chance. 877-520-1150. Questions about these arcane Senate procedures. I was going to say we're probably just putting everybody to sleep on the East Coast. But no, they're calling from New Jersey, so they must still be up. 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. One more segment here after the top of the hour news with David Dayan. And do stop by the chat room. Say hello to Desi. She's not bored, but she would love to see you. It's hopping over there as usual at bradblog.com. The top item, just click on through, come on in, say hello, or shout out on the Twitters to The Brad Blog. Brad in for Mike, David Dayan, one more segment straight ahead. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Yes, it is I, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow in for Mike tonight and tomorrow night. Mike will be back with us on Monday. We're glad you found us here. Broadcasting coast to coast and around the globe. Here from the left coast, the beautiful studios of K-Talk AM 1150. all night long. Glad you could join us. We were speaking in the last hour with David Dayan of Fire Dog Lake, who was kind enough to stick around for just one more segment here to take a couple of quick calls. You can get in if you like, 877-520-1150. We're going to talk, actually I'll wait till David leaves to talk about some of the comedy. Comedy in the U.S. House, it really is, you know, other than the whole apocalypse and ruining everything we know in this nation, it is much funnier when Democrats are, I'm sorry, when Republicans are in charge. Don't
it's
you agree,
good
Dave?
For bloggers, anyway.
It is.
It's endless streams of easy material.
That's true. It is so easy, and it is so funny. You know, it's just not funny when Obama screws up. It's just sad and depressing. And all right, 877-520-1150 is our phone number. Okay, David, I wanted to keep you around for no reason, just because it was a Sarah Palin call. So I thought you might enjoy it, although somebody also wants to talk about the filibuster. But let's first go to the Sarah Palin call and see what kind of fun we can have here. Greg from Chatham, New Jersey. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Yes, Brad. Actually, it's pronounced Chatham.
Oh, you know, I should know that. I only lived in Manhattan for or Manhattan for about 10 years, so my mistake. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. listen, you tried to paint the Republicans as lying about death panels, and yet if you
Did I mention death panels tonight?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Well, they do lie about death panels. So go ahead. I just wanted to be clear because I wasn't sure I mentioned them.
Calling Obama's own regulatory czar, Cass Sunstein, a liar because he was on about 2 months ago, I believe it was the Charlie Rose show, and virtually admitted to the fact that when it comes to treatment of old people, one of the ways that the health care plan must work, if you understand economics, is that they're going to have to restrict treatment of elderly patients when it comes to expensive care. And that's exactly what a death panel is. A death panel isn't described as a...
Like the private insurance companies do now, for example, right?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because it just came out in the last day or two that there's been a study. Anyone can Google this, any one of your listeners out there, or any two of your listeners out there can Google it, that statistically...
Is that because our listeners are stupid?
There's only 8,000 people, only 8,000 people out of 300 million Americans who are denied pre-existing coverage. So when you have all your left...
Hang on, Greg. We're not just talking about pre-existing coverage. We're talking about the insurance company, and if you're going to tell me there's 8,000 in this country, the insurance company actually turning down procedures. Oh, you can't do that procedure because it's so-called experimental or so on and so forth. But hang on. Let me give...
Hang on, Greg. You just told another lie, Brad. I have to call you out on it.
Okay, go ahead.
If you have an insurance policy, it's a contractual agreement, and an insurance company cannot deny you coverage under penalty of being pursued by the attorney general of the state you're in if they breach the contract of that insurance policy to treat you.
Okay.
So, Brad, that's another piece of propaganda from the left.
Okay, Greg, hang on. Just settle down. Greg, settle down. It's okay. I'm not hanging up on you. I just want to give David a chance to respond if he has any thoughts, okay? And I'll have some more for you in a second. David, hang on, Greg. It's okay. It's all right, pal. David, any thoughts you'd like to... What happened to David? Oh, I hung up on David. Oh, brilliant.
He's the one that ran away.
All right. No, no, he didn't. I actually hung up on... Tony, can you tell Des to get him back on here? My fault. And I'll bring him back on a second. A couple of points, though, Greg. One, the contract that you speak of allows them to decide what is allowable for the, you know, what they decide to give you, what they determine to be experimental and what they determine isn't. They get to determine, for example, how many days you get to stay in a hospital and so on and so forth. That is in the contract. Yes, if they break the contract, you can try to sue them. You can go to the attorney general if you think you can get something done there, but you're usually sick and you don't need that to happen. That's one point. Number two, hang on, Greg, you're going to get your chance. Number two, and I think we have David back here, the first point about the pre-existing, I'm sorry, about the death panels. I don't know what Cass Sunstein said, so I'm not going to speak to that. I'm happy to call him a liar anytime. I don't care. I don't give a damn. But the fact is, what was in the bill, you don't have to take Cass Sunstein's word or anybody else's. What was in the bill was quite clear. It was not about deciding what medical care you can and can't have. It was about end-of-life discussion, counseling, help, so people know what to do, and it actually saves money when the patients decide to make these plans ahead of time. That's all that it was about. There was no panel. There was no government body deciding whether you get to live or die. The death panel nonsense was exactly that. It was a lie. Now, Greg, I'll give you a chance to respond, but we got David back on the line, and I don't know how much of that he heard because I screwed up and knocked him off. So hang on. Let me see if I can do this. There we go. All right, David, I'm sorry about that. Were you able to hear any of that, or did I just...
I heard a little bit. I know this is about the ubiquitous death panel.
Yeah.
But let me just say one thing to that, and then we can go.
Okay.
We know that there are death panels. They're happening in Arizona, where the state of Arizona has denied transplants that are legal and eligible under Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
A second patient died today.
Yep.
For the cause of not getting a proper transplant. This is this was done entirely to save money in the budget. It saves a whopping $1 million of a $2 billion budget gap in the state of Arizona, and that's your death panel.
And that was Jan Brewer who did this. Now, Greg, do you have any response to either David or me?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, isn't it interesting when you talk about end-of-life treatment? They try to put it in to force doctors to have end-of-life care once every once every 5 years.
No, they don't force them to do anything. They are able to do it, and they will be paid. They will be paid for it if they do it. Go ahead, Greg.
I respond. So the blowback was so great from the medical community and from the American public because they know what it's all about. It's all about telling an elderly patient, look, you know, you've had a nice life. It's your time to go. So they took it out. Well, hold on a second. So there was a lot of pictures. And so Obama, the weakling that he is, he took it out. And then between Christmas and New Year's, they tried to sneak it in, only worse, because then they wanted to sneak it in.
Okay.
Have forced doctors to have it not every 5 years, but every year.
Every year. No, they don't force them.
Well,
they are, Greg. Greg, I got to go. I'm sorry. I gave you a lot of time.
It was leaked to New York Times, and that weakling took it out again.
I agree. Hey, listen, you will get no argument from me when it comes to whether Obama is a weakling or not. No question about it. But the fact that they're going to force them to do these death panels, that there's anything in the language which you can read which says quite clearly what this is about, is not about deciding if they are allowed to have certain treatment. It is about counseling them to help them, help the patient decide.
The only thing we have that we know of that literally decides whether someone can live or die and get a certain transplant or a certain treatment is happening in Arizona under a Republican governor and a Republican legislature.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Let me give you one filibuster call, and then I will release you for the night, David.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mark in San Francisco. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind? You actually have something that's on topic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. I don't believe it's a good idea to end the filibuster at this time. And the reason is because I am very afraid, I think it's a high possibility, that we will lose both chambers of the Congress and the presidency in 12. And I'll tell you another thing. Don't think that the Republicans will allow a bunch of pesky Democrats to filibuster. They will end it themselves.
So what's the point? So
and
if they're going to end
I say
it,
let them end it.
Okay.
And the other thing is, what are we going to get to really, what's going to be of any value for the Senate to do? The
right
Senate
now, we have a judicial crisis in this country. We have hundreds of vacancies in the judiciary. And one of the major things that is in this reform proposal drastically limits the amount of time that those judicial nominees can be held up on the floor of the U.S. Senate. So that's an example.
And I think even Justice, hang on, Mark. I believe it was Justice John Roberts the other day who came out and said something needs to be done about this problem in the judiciary, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. And Mark, well, your other...
Remember, and for the next 2 years, we might get something out of that. I'll grant you that.
Mm-hmm.
But remember when Cheney was going to go in and use the nuclear option to force, I think it was Alito, to get in, and the Democrats caved on it. So the Republicans, when they get in, right, they are going to not allow a filibuster to give them a problem at all. Now, what I also believe is that the Democrats should have done this after the, what was it, the 2008 election.
No question.
But they didn't. And Mark,
or at the latest, they should have done it at 2010.
Thanks.
At this point, I say, let the Republicans do it.
Thanks for the call, Mark. I do got to go. I do appreciate your call.
Here's the one thing I will say, because this comes up a lot, and it comes from a pretty partisan perspective, who's going to win, who's going to lose. You know, these rule changes aren't going to just last for the next 4 years or the next 8 years or the next 10 years. They're going to last for a good long time. And Tom Harkin said this on the floor of the U.S. Senate. We cannot have a 21st century government operating under 19th century rules. And, you know, at some point we have to get rid of this structure that basically bottles everything up, allows nothing to be done. We have other countries that are zooming past us because we have this phlegmatic government. When we go into other countries on imperial adventures and put in governments and install governments in Iraq and Afghanistan, we don't use this structure of government.
Yep.
We use a parliament because this structure of government is messed up. So we need to fix this. And this reform proposal, while not going all the way there, goes at least some of the way towards a saner U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think that Mark's proposal, as you pointed out, David, makes much sense. He says the Republicans are going to end it anyway when they come in.
Right.
So why? You know, but don't end it now. Well, for one, we're not even talking about ending it. Unfortunately, right now we're talking about amending it, if you will.
End it, don't end it.
That's it. And so we're not talking about ending it. But this notion that we don't want to do it because then their guys won't be able to do it, our guys won't be. You know, you're right on the money, David. We have to move this process forward. The process is currently being abused, and the notion that, we want Democrats to be able to abuse it too doesn't make a lot of sense. Hey, brother, I appreciate you staying up extra late for me tonight, David.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, hope so. All David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake. You can check him out at news.firedoglake.com. Much more show straight ahead. Much more Republican comedy, I suspect, also ahead. And your calls at 877-520-1150. Anything you want to talk about, they're your airways. Use them or lose them. Brad in from Malloy. This isn't going to get to our house either, is it? See, we keep wanting to do this house music, so to speak. And there's what? Maybe sooner, maybe? Yeah. Keep it playing for a while. If you hear them say our house, then we'll have a theme going. There we go! Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad in for Mike, talking about Congress with 2 minutes left before the bottom of the hour. Way to go! Who's running this show? Who knows what they're doing? will I even have time? No. Now I'm going to have to hold this birther lady until after the break, I think. The Congress convened for their first full day today, the U.S. House anyway, now controlled by the Republicans. And what did they do with their first day? Well, these fiscal conservatives, see, I make myself mad when I say that. They're not conservatives. These right-wingers decided it was okay to spend $1.1 million today to read the U.S. Constitution out loud. Now, I have nothing against the Constitution. I kind of like it. Actually, I like it a lot. But, you know, Republicans haven't proven that they're all that much interested in the Constitution. They certainly haven't for the last 8 years. And that made for a lot of interesting situations today, a lot of interesting ironies on the floor. One of those ironies happened. Well, I had to hold it till after the break, don't I? The birther lady. Yeah, I do. A lot of ironies because, you know, these guys who have been pretending, who have been doing this kabuki theater now for the past year or two, that they're outraged with the Democrats violating the Constitution. Where were you Constitution lovers over the last 8 years before that, when every goddamn piece of it was shredded up, was laughed at, was ignored by George Bush, Dick Cheney, and friends? You didn't much care about the Constitution then, did you? Oh, now you found religion? Doubt it. We'll see. We'll talk about that and your call straight ahead. Brad, in for Malloy.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Yeah, I do. No, it's not. Well, yeah, that has been the Brad Blog's theme song for anyone who knows bradblog.com. Oh, yeah, I'm Brad from Brad Blog. That has been the Brad Blog's theme song. Keep it playing there for a while, Tone. That has been our theme song for going on 7 years now since we set up shop back in 2004. That's Jerry Rafferty of Steeler's Wheel, 1972. Jerry Rafferty died yesterday at the age of 63, I think he was. He will be missed. He wrote that tune with Joe Egan. He also wrote other hits such as Right Down the Line and Baker Street. Thank you, Jerry. Slay him up there in heaven, will ya? All right, back to our previously scheduled broadcast here. Our phone numbers, by the way, if you want to get in, 877-520-1150. And they are chatting away over at the chat room at bradblog.com. Stop on by the first item there and just link through to the comment section, and you'll see the big old chat room. You can jump on in there, say hi to For Earth, Tim from who else is there? Tim from LA, Kath Armstrong, Maine Coyote, Ken Jackson, Lottie RJ, Roya. I don't know how you say that. They're all there. Stop by and say hello. Oh, Bill Wright's man is in there. Lots going on. And of course, the lovely Desi Doyen is your swell hostess tonight. So anything you do want to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. These are, as I always like to say, your airwaves. Use them or lose them even more than you already have. 877-520-1150. All right, we were talking about the U.S. House. The Republicans came to Congress this week and decided they gave a damn about the Constitution. Of course, they had been using this this newfound discovery of the Constitution over the past year while they've been fighting health care insurance reform. It's unconstitutional. Well, we'll find out. I'm not one of these people. Early on, there was a lot of people making fun of these folks who were going to court, these attorney generals who were filing suit that the health care law was unconstitutional. Is it or isn't it? That's what I'd like to find out. That's what the courts are for. It seems like it. I have no problem with it in that sense. It's not a particularly good bill. Should have gone a lot further. Why this would be unconstitutional, but other plans that have passed were not. Well, I don't see why, but good. That's what the courts are for. Let's find it. Let's test it out. But for these Republicans and these Tea Partiers who were running around over the past 2 years going on and on about, the Constitution, Democrats are... are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The next thing you know, they're going to act like they give a damn about the deficit. Oh, yeah, they do that too. Come on, people. I have no problem. I have no problem with people that I disagree with. I really don't. If you're legitimate, if you think we shouldn't have the health care for whatever reason you want, there's a lot of reasons to not like the bill, for sure. It doesn't go far enough. It does give unprecedented amounts of money in the mandate to private insurance companies who, by the way, ought to all be put out of business. Well, they can stay in business if they want, but what they do is kind of immoral. profiting off your illness. But we fought that battle last year. Republicans want to fight it again, and they want to act like they give a damn about the Constitution in order to do it. They don't. But they want to act like they do, and that's fine. So they came around today. We're going to read the U.S. Constitution on the floor of the Senate. Cool. All right. Floor of the U.S. House, I should say. And that they did. And everything was going well enough, and they were actually having Democrats were reading and Republicans were reading. And a really interesting story, actually, as the day unfolded. And if I get lucky, maybe in the next hour, I'll try to read you this story that Dave Weigel put together over at Slate that told the story of what happened today in the U.S. House. And it's kind of amusing and interesting, and historians will no doubt appreciate it. It's a good story, and if I have time, I will read it. I think he even calls it Story Hour or something like that. But there was a couple of interesting and amusing points that happened. One of them was while they were reading Section 1, Article 2 of the... of the U.S. Constitution. This would be the natural born citizen clause. While they were reading, and how's the clause go? For no person except a natural born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. Well, at that point, there was a furor in the gallery, or at least one woman, who was screaming, "Accept Obama! Accept Obama! Help us, Jesus!" That's actually what she was screaming. It's hard to hear her, but here's what it sounded like today when they were reading this provision.
I now yield to the gentleman from New Jersey, Mr. Pallone.
No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to be the office of president. Neither shall...
Help us, Jesus!
The chair would remind all persons in the gallery that they are here as guests of the House, and that any manifestation of approval or disapproval of the proceedings is a violation of the rules of the House. The chair notes a disturbance in the gallery in contravention of the law and rules of the House. The sergeant at arms will remove those persons responsible for the disturbance and restore order in the gallery. Gentleman from Virginia.
Okay.
From New Jersey.
Yeah, from New Jersey. Help us, Jesus! I'm not sure, but I don't think Jesus is a natural-born citizen of the United States either. So I'm not sure what help he was going to be there. But what I found amusing was this, about this. She was escorted out and arrested by the Capitol Hill police. So while they're reading the U.S. Constitution, when they get to Section 1, Article 2, they actually had to revoke The First Amendment, which says the Congress shall make no law inhibiting the free speech. So her free speech rights had to be interrupted. She had to be hauled away for expressing her opinions in the House today, as the Republicans were all showing us what the U.S. Constitution was all about. And by the way, that was Frank Pallone, the Democrat from New Jersey, who got the draw on that particular clause, the natural born citizen clause. They were sort of rotating, for the most part, they were rotating back and forth between Democrats and Republicans, although there were some that I think everybody was fighting over the, as Dave Weigel tells the story anyway over at Slate, that everybody, all the Republicans were fighting for the Second Amendment for some odd reason. And there was also a fight about whether they would read the whole Constitution, because, you know, the Republicans, they talk about, oh, we're originalists. We want the Constitution to mean exactly what it meant on the day that it was drafted. Well, yeah, okay, there's that whole three-fifths of a person clause concerning slavery. That stuff obviously has been struck, but there was a fight, and I believe it was Jesse Jackson Jr. who wanted that stuff to be read today. So we would know what the Constitution was and how the Constitution is changed over time. Curiously absent from the reading of the U.S. House today, of the U.S. Congress, what is it? The U.S. Constitution in the U.S. House were Reps Michelle Bachmann and Steve King, two of the Congress people who have been invoking the Constitution the most over the past several months. In fact, Michelle Bachmann, head of the Tea Party Caucus, has called for there to be Constitution lessons in the U.S. House, and I think they're actually going to do this. And Antonin Scalia, who claims to know something about the U.S. Constitution, questionable claim, by the way, the Supreme Court Justice has said that he's going to help teach these classes. Well, and this is Michelle Bachmann's idea. She put this together, crazy Michelle Bachmann. Well, Greg Sargent points out this afternoon, late this evening. He says, did anyone else notice that GOP reps Michelle Bachmann and Steve King, both Tea Party chieftains who routinely wrap themselves in their policy preferences in the Constitution, were conspicuously absent from today's reading? My understanding is that the arrangement was first come, first serve, so all you had to do was to read was show up early. Maybe they had good reasons for missing the reading. But given that Bachmann and King never miss a chance to bask in the Constitution's reflected glory, you'd think they would have done all they could to ensure that they participated in such a momentous, ritualistic honoring of our founding document. After all, many of those Constitution-despising Democrats were able to find the time to show up, points out Greg Sargent. So they didn't even make it. I'm starting to believe it's theater. What do you think? Give us a call, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Yeah, it is theater. It's all about theater, and it's going to be all about theater, I'm sorry to say, for the next 2 years, because, you know, they're bringing forward this, they're going to revoke health care, and as we have learned today, they're going to vote anyway to revoke health care. They can't do it. It's purely symbolic, and the CBO has found that if they revoke health care, it will add $230 billion to the deficit. But I thought the GOP cared about the deficit. I thought that's what, well, no, they don't. It's all a lie. So this is all a bunch of theater. We're going to see a whole bunch more theater in the days ahead. And by the way, we're even going to see some from the Democrats. Who was this today? I have this here somewhere. Someone did some theater, strong stuff from Chuck Schumer. Who puts out House Republicans on notice that their agenda will hit a brick wall in the Senate, said Schumer. We're here today to say these reckless fiscal policies are dead on arrival here in the Senate. We're here to assure everyone that don't worry, these things won't happen because we're here and we're responsible. Well, talk about theater. Democrats are responsible? Okay, hope so. John Boehner said when he was told that the Congressional Budget Office felt that it would add $230 billion to the deficit over the next 10 years, his response to the CBO, the nonpartisan CBO, was that, oh, they are entitled to their own opinion. They're entitled to their own opinion. They're the CBO. This is their job. It's the Congressional Budget Office. This is all they do. They're nonpartisan. They said it's going to add $230 billion. Somehow, John Boehner, however, he knows better because he cares about deficits or the Constitution. Or good Lord. It's going to be a fun 2 years. Brad in from Malloy. Your call is straight ahead. Burning down the house all night long here on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. We'll be here also with you tomorrow night, and Malloy will be returning on Monday at his previously appointed hour. Until then, we're broadcasting from the Left Coast. Glad you can join us here. Our number's 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Talking about the new day, the new dawn of the Republican U.S. Congress. It is a lot funnier. That's all I'm saying. It's a lot funnier. And the story with Congressman Sessions and Fitzpatrick, well, I'll tell you about that in a second. But I want to take a call. Tony has been holding for a while. 877-520-1150. Tony from Janesville, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Not bad. I just comment. It seems kind of silly to call it unconstitutional to, mandate that people have health care because they do it with so many other things anyway, like car insurance.
Well, but what they will argue about car insurance, by the way, I'm not arguing that health care is unconstitutional here, but I'm just giving you their argument. They will say, well, you don't have to drive a car. That's an option. That's something you choose to do, but you don't have a choice of being a human being.
I mean, or you could even go further and say, that we have police forces and, we have other things that we're mandated to pay for that, we don't choose to. It's, that's the mm-hmm. way you run a society.
Yeah. Well, that would be a tax. And, this is one of the things, if they just made it a tax and then they said, okay, this tax is going to be used to pay for X, Y, Z, but that's, the tax is paid to the government. In this case, it's being paid directly to essentially the way it goes is that if you don't buy private insurance, then you will be fined. I mean, that's exactly, essentially what they're saying.
I think what they're scared of is, they're worried about what's going to happen maybe with, the insurance companies and how much, payments are going to be and whether they'll be forced into that. And if that is the case, then perhaps their concern should lie with, those things and not the actual base idea of having to pay for it in the first place.
Well, it needs to be paid for in some fashion, and of course, reasonable people, progressives, would understand that the best way to do this is just to charge a fee, charge a tax, whatever, and single payer. Boom. Government pays for it. You need health care. You go out and you get it, and it's paid for by the government via our tax dollars, and it cuts out the private insurers who are making an obscene profit off of our illnesses. But they didn't choose to do it that way. They went this other route. Now, that said, before the hour. Well, anyway, I got to run. Tony, any other thoughts here? Because I have an additional one, but I'll let you go first.
Sure. One last comment. I think it's entertaining that, they would be willing to pay for something through a tax, but not of their own pocket, because either way, they're still paying for it.
Yeah. And of course, they're not really mad about it being unconstitutional. It's just a way to make Obama look stupid. That's what it's about. But we'll see. Test it in the courts. We'll find out. Hey, thanks, Tony. I do appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Stay warm up there in Wisconsin. 877-520-1150. Before we went to the break, I started to talk about the theater, Kabuki theater, if you will, from all sides, including on the Democratic side. And this was the story that I was thinking about that, let's see, from Raw Story today. Even as Republicans gear up for a vote to repeal health care reform, one progressive House member is making a renewed push for the public option. On Wednesday, the first day of the 112th Congress, Representative Lynn Woolsey of California introduced a measure to establish a robust public health care, public health insurance option as a supplement to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. California Congresswoman argued that the plan, which pays physicians 5% more than Medicare rates, would lower insurance costs and address deficit concerns, pointing to a CBO report saying it would cut the deficit by $68 billion. Where are the fiscal conservative deficit hawks now? They ought to be jumping all over this. Public option, it's back, says Lynn Woolsey. Will it just be theater? I have a feeling it might. She says this is the perfect moment for the public option. Builds on health care reform legislation, lowers costs, provides a great way to bring down the deficit. Sounds good to me. Bring it on. All right. One more hour of the Malloy Show ahead. You're not going to want to miss it. Brad, in for Malloy. Green news at the top of the hour if you're in San Francisco. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, and swell fella, broadcasting coast to coast and around the globe tonight for Mike, who is ailing a bit. He will be taking tomorrow night off as well, and then we'll be rejoining you on Monday. Until then, you got me, and I'm glad to be here. 877-520-1150 is our number if you want to get in. We got some open lines here tonight, and also some open chat lines over in the chat room at bradblog.com. We were talking about... And I'm going to talk, well, I'll get to that in a moment, but let me close the last hour out. We were talking about the Republicans and their Kabuki theater and their pretend interest in repealing health care. Why? I don't know. I mean, they're going to make billions for their buddies in the private insurance company. So what's that all about? Who knows? They just want to make Obama look silly if they can. And, you know, it's really not that hard to make Obama look silly. But they're going to great efforts to do so. So we were talking about the constitutionality of the health care insurance reform bill. And some guy by the name of Harvey F. over in the chat room apparently was didn't have enough courage to call in and ask the question. But he actually makes a good point. In the chat room, he says, well, how about if Senator Reid sent the Republican bill to the CBO to be scored? Oh, yeah, because the CBO found that repealing health care will, in fact, increase the deficit by $230 billion, to which Speaker Boehner said, well, that's their opinion. And then he cried. I don't know what that was about, but... So Harvey F. says, well, how about if Senator Reid sent the Republican bill to the CBO to be scored, which is, I think, what happened. That's how we have this $230 billion increase to the deficit that will be found if the repeal, and I love this, they actually call the bill the Kill the Job-Killing Health Reform Package Bill. It actually has job killing in the title of the bill. Way to go, Frank Luntz. Let's see. How about, Harvey F. says, Senator Reid sends it to be scored. Then it came back, refused to bring it to the floor because it would bust the budget. Well, here's the problem. Our friend Harvey F. may be mixing up the two chambers of the House, because the Republican bill is actually in the House, not the Senate. So it's not up to Senator Reid whether it comes forward. It's only in the House. And the Republicans now control the House, and that's why they will bring it forward, no matter what the CBO says, no matter how much of a hole it will blow in the deficit. Okay, hope we answered that. All right, a couple of points I want to get to. Folks who know my work at Brad Blog and elsewhere know that I spend a lot of time on concerns of elections, election fraud, and, of course, rebutting the fake Republican, quote-unquote, voter fraud scams that are out there. Well, it's back again, and for two reasons this is important to talk about. One, because of this guy in Arkansas. Are you listening, Arkansas? I know we got listeners in Arkansas. Are you listening, Arkansas? And Ohio, as long as you're in Ohio. Listen, listen up, Ohio. Listen who has come back to the U.S. Congress. Guy by the name of Tim Griffin. Who is Tim Griffin? Well, to tell this story, we've got to rewind the clock a little bit. We'll rewind it quite a bit. There was a debate earlier this week amongst the GOP chairmen, potential GOP chairmen and chairwomen, and they were asked about, of course, voter fraud. How will they combat this scourge of massive Democratic voter fraud? Democrats stealing elections from coast to coast. Of course, they're not stealing elections, and there's almost no evidence whatsoever of any voter fraud out there, as we discovered when George W. Bush put unprecedented resources into ferreting out those wascally Democratic vote fraudsters. And, of course, he was able to get something like 18 convictions for it. Across the entire nation, unprecedented millions put into it in all the years that he was in office. So, no, it's not really a problem. On the other hand, one guy walking up to an electronic e-voting tabulator with a few keystrokes in there can change the results of just about any election, countywide, statewide, even across the nation, if you pick the right state in Ohio. And that's what they were trying to do back in Ohio in 2004 when this fellow by the name of Tim Griffin, a protege of Karl Rove's, sent out some email to some of his fellow RNC folks, but he misaddressed it. And instead of sending it to georgewbush.org, I think it was, or .net, he sent it to georgewbush.com. Completely different group. Oops. What did that email say? Well, it had an attachment, had some Excel spreadsheets. And what were those Excel spreadsheets? They were lists of voters under the subject line caging, sent from Karl Rove protege Tim Griffin of the RNC at the time. And, of course, these lists were voters who lived in, you guessed it, minority areas. Troops who were deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan at the time. And what this list was the caging lists. These were the lists that they had planned, the Republicans had planned to send direct mail to with a do not forward direction on it, basically trying to prove that they didn't really live there. And when they didn't respond to these letters, or when they bounced back, they would then use this as proof that these people who happen to be minorities or shipped off across overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan. So yeah, they didn't get their mail because they weren't there to get it, but it's proof that they don't live there and they're preparing to commit voter fraud. And they can then be challenged at the polls. And that was the plan. And, of course, this was something that the Republicans back in 1982 or 92, now I can't remember, down in Louisiana, had signed a consent decree to not do, to not cage voters, that caging voters is illegal. Targeting zip codes and minorities because they happen to be minorities, they happen to vote Democratic. Minorities, elderly, students. You can't do it. But they were doing it back in 2004, and Tim Griffin was heading up the affair, and he got busted by our good friend Greg Palast, who happened to get his hands on those emails when they were missent. Well, Tim Griffin then went on to be appointed as U.S. attorney in Arkansas, because his good friend Karl Rove wanted to help him pad his resume. And as part of this whole U.S. attorney purge that happened after the 2004 election, when they fired these perfectly good, but too moderate, I guess, Republican U.S. attorneys around the country, including David Iglesias down there in New Mexico, because he wouldn't bring voter fraud charges, despite the fact that there was no evidence of voter fraud. So they had to be let go. Bud Cummins up in Arkansas was another one of them that had to be let go. And in his place was put Tim Griffin, Karl Rove's buddy, to help him pad his resume. Well, once this all began to come out, because of some good digging, not by the mainstream media, but by Talking Points Memo and so forth, and they found out that unprecedented, that they had the Bush DOJ had actually fired these guys, not for cause, but just because they weren't being aggressive enough on voter fraud, or they wanted to get in their buddies. So they put in Tim Griffin up there, and after that came out, Tim Griffin, oh, he had to resign. Resigned in shame, said he would never be back in politics again. The AP quoted him as crying at his speech. We may have a clip of that when we come back, because I got to get to a break here now. He said he was never going to be in politics again. Well, never trust a Karl Rove Republican, because Tim Griffin, the vote cager from 2004, who was never held accountable. Tim Griffin, the USA, who was appointed by Karl Rove to the job just so he could pad his resume, who had to resign in shame and disgrace. Yes, that Tim Griffin ran for office in this past November down in Arkansas's 2nd District for the U.S. Congress. And despite his criminal past and his long rap sheet, he was elected to the U.S. House. And make that even worse, he was put in a leadership role. He's now the deputy whip. And he will this year be sitting on the U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee, overseeing our legal system in these United States. You see, that's what happens when you don't bother with accountability. And that's what the Democrats did. They said, oh, he's gone. We can let him go. We don't have to worry anything about it. Well, you know, the inspector general at the DOJ looked into this and find out that this guy, Tim Griffin, he didn't tell the truth. He lied about it. The whole thing was lies. And yet, no charges were ever brought for anything. And when that happens, these guys could turn around, run for office again, and now they're sitting on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. That's where you will find Tim Griffin. That's the oversight that I expect you to carry out, oh, citizens of these United States. Keep your eye on the Judiciary Committee and Tim Griffin, because you got a vote cager and a vote fraudster dude sitting there. Keep your eye on him. I guess they had to replace Tom Feeney with someone. Your calls ahead. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let her memory torture me.
Feels like Friday night with that tune. What will we play tomorrow? Will there be any music left? Welcome back to the Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. You can participate in the show. It's 23 minutes after the hour. You can participate by giving us a shout at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. And we take all callers. You know, is it, well, we'll call it an open line. Is that what it needs? Open line. You call it open line, then people feel that it's okay to call it. No, I'm, you know, I'm never particularly picky because I like to hear from folks. Who even from folks who disagree with me, love people who disagree with me. I'm going to have to play more on that voter fraud, that Tim Griffin stuff tomorrow. I'll wait till tomorrow because there was a story that I, you look disappointed. Okay, I know you're ready. If I change my mind, I'm going straight to you, Tony. You will play that sound clip of Tim Griffin crying and pleading his innocence. But no, well, maybe tomorrow. Because I also didn't get to talk about the Republicans and the GOP debate where they were trying to out voter fraud each other, basically saying that, no, I'm going to be tougher on voter fraud. No, I'm going to institute photo ID restrictions at the polling place. I'm going to keep more people from voting than you. I didn't get to that. But maybe I will tomorrow or something like that. Because I did want to hit this, because this is really funny. Talking about these funny Republicans. House Republicans are eager. This is from Think Progress today. House Republicans are eager to make good on their campaign promise to hold a pointless vote on repealing President Obama's health care law. But they'll have to wait a little longer. Thanks to an embarrassing blunder by Representative Pete Sessions, Republican of Texas. Sessions failed to take his oath of office on the House floor alongside the other 450 Congress members, congressmen yesterday. I guess that would have been Wednesday. Yeah. Taking it in the Capitol Visitors Center instead. However, Sessions was the not-quite member who offered the health care repeal motion today in the House Rules Committee, to which he has ironically been assigned, forcing Committee Chairman David Dreyer to abruptly adjourn the hearing on this bill. Dreyer is consulting with the parliamentarian about how to best craft a unanimous consent agreement to rectify the situation, since the guy who filed the bill wasn't officially a member. Committee spokeswoman Joe Maney said, "We should have an agreement shortly." Democratic aides pounced on the Republicans' blunder. Despite the fact that they read the Constitution today, they should have read it yesterday, actually, one senior Democratic aide said. I guess swearing in their members wasn't part of their pledge. Oops. In response, Representative Anthony Weiner joked that Sessions, quote, "didn't look as congressional as usual this morning." Sessions, of course, was finally sworn in this afternoon by Speaker John Boehner, but freshman Congressman Mike Fitzpatrick, Republican from Pennsylvania, also missed the official swearing-in yesterday, taking part in the faux swearing-in with Sessions. So Fitzpatrick read a portion of the Constitution today and took votes on the House floor today, despite not officially even being a member of Congress. In response to the fiasco, House officials were searching for a precedent to follow, but had not yet found a previous instance of members-elect voting without having taken the constitutionally required oath of office. Think Progress placed calls, which were not immediately returned, to Congressman Fitzpatrick and Sessions, and will update if they give any response. Jackasses. Unbelievable. All right, I promise, your call's next. 877-520-1150. Come on in. Brad in for Mike.
They'll do 'cause back then the old devils are at it again.
That's for sure. Yesterday, lawmakers in more than five states announced they are launching an effort against birthright citizenship by seeking to apply the 14th Amendment, quote, only to children with at least one parent who is a permanent resident or citizen. Explaining the impetus behind the move, one South Carolina lawmaker called U.S.-born children, oh, this is lovely, called U.S.-born children of undocumented immigrants, quote, poison and a, quote, malady that needs to be cured. Our phone number is 877-520-1150. If you'd like to get in the last hour, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. 877-520-1150. What's on your mind? Love to hear from you. Mark in San Clams Disco, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's up?
Well, Brad, it's the 30-year war on the middle class, and it's going to heat up.
Yeah?
You know, they're going to come after the unions now, and it's just going to get worse.
Yep.
And, you know, Barack Obama, you better get it. There's been a war on the middle class for 30 years. Our roads are going to shambles. Our schools are going to shambles. People are losing their jobs. They want to take all our safety nets away. There's a real war going on, and there's a lot of casualties, and every day it's more and more. And all these wars that we're fighting, and wasting our money and our lives, it's ridiculous.
I hear you.
It's just a shame, Brad. We've come to this.
Yeah, I know. No, I hear you, brother. And it's insane. It's really, really insane. And you look at Obama today announced William Daley from the Clinton administration, a guy who has been encouraging Obama to go more to the center. How much more to the center can you go? You know, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe Obama should go to the center, because at that point he would be moving left. I mean, he's so far to the right on so much of this. And so it doesn't look like it's getting any better. I was kind of hoping, you know, he'd come out and name someone like Howard Dean as his chief of staff, or Russ Feingold, who he needs a job now. Wouldn't it be cool to have him as the chief of staff in the White House?
It'd be great. You know, Brad, we have a party, the Republican Party, which is basically just run by corporate America.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's just they own that party, and we're not getting any representation from them for the people of this country. It's a fiasco that's going on there.
I hear you, Mark. And unfortunately, a lot of those same corporations also own a lot of these Democrats. And that's unfortunately what so much of this is about. Until we get campaign finance reform, until we get corporate money the hell out of our election system, this is going to continue, I'm afraid.
You know, Brad, it's up to guys like you and me and the progressives in this country to band together and push a movement that's going to force these politicians our way, because I have no confidence in the Democratic Party to do anything to help the fiasco we're in now. I really don't.
Well,
it's going to be up to guys like you and me to do it.
I concur. We got to hold them accountable. Keep up the good fight, Mark. I appreciate
the
call.
Brother.
All right.
You too.
Thank you, sir. Yep. Richard in, where is he? Richard in Wisconsin. A lot of calls from Wisconsin tonight. From DeForest, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Richard.
Yes, this is Richard calling. I wanted to make a point about computers and robots taking people's jobs.
Yeah.
You know about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, the point that I wanted to make is, are the corporations and the people who run them thinking ahead? Because in my estimation, I don't see a lot of robots or a lot of computers that take people's jobs away actually buying
going out
automobiles
buying stuff.
Or other big-ticket items.
Yeah, I know.
And so they need to rethink all of that logic.
Well, they have
to do, and go back to hiring people again.
Well, yeah, well, you know, whether it's robots, the problem is it's not even robots. Cheaper than robots is, you know, slave labor in China and, you know, Guam and all over the world rather than here. And you're right. This means then that Americans don't have jobs. They can't buy stuff. But if only we could sell stuff around the world, oh, yeah, we can. NAFTA, CAFTA, all of those trade agreements. Now we can move whatever little we do make. We can sell it elsewhere. The corporations can sell it elsewhere. And people end up in this country going straight to hell. And you're right. They ain't looking ahead. I don't know what they're thinking, because at some point this doesn't work anymore and it collapses. And it sure as hell feels like we're getting close to that point. Thanks for your call, Richard. I appreciate it. All right. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Do I have? Yeah, I got time. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. All right. Let me get to Joe in what number? Well, see, the numbers are gone there. There we go. Joe in Sparta, Tennessee. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening. What's on your mind? And Happy New Year, by the way.
Well, it is sort of a Happy New Year, since there's truly a battle in Congress now, finally, instead of a one-way street.
Yeah? How has it been a one-way street up till now?
Well, look, you progressives had the House, the Senate, and the presidency, whether you want to admit to it or not. But what? Now you don't.
Wait, are you saying that there was... Now I don't. Are you saying that there was Democrats? I'm sorry, that there was progressives in the White House, in the House, in the Senate?
Well, yes. Barack Obama.
What's a progressive piece of legislation that Barack Obama has passed, Joe?
Well, the total annihilation of the private health care industry with this bill that was passed.
The total annihilation of the private health care industry? How did that happen? It seems like they're going to make billions and billions, the private healthcare industry, from this bill. Their stocks went soaring through the roof when this bill passed. Have you really drunk that much Kool-Aid that you think that bill is either progressive or any kind of government takeover of healthcare, private healthcare? Do you really believe that, Joe?
Well, yes, I do. It's 2,700 pages, and nobody really knows what's exactly in it, although bits and pieces
Read it. What do you mean nobody knows what's in it? It's been out there for a year and a half, Joe.
When's the last time you've read a 2,700 page? Look, this thing's five times the length of War and Peace.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I know. And tell me how it is. What part of the private health care system has been taken over by the government? Just tell me that much, since you're, you know, think this is outrageous.
I'll say this. Medicare and Medicaid has skewed the pricing structure to where a lot of doctors are refusing to accept that. So you do have
No. Answer the question. Joe, answer the question. What part of the private health insurance industry has been taken over by the government because of this bill? Tell me. You made this claim. You were told this was the truth when you watched Fox News or heard it on Rush Limbaugh. So tell me, how has the private health care industry been taken over by the government?
It's in the process of being taken over by the government.
How so?
Look, you're going to ration care because there's going to be less competition. With less competition...
How is there less competition, Joe?
You have less doctors. Look.
How is that? No, answer the question, Joe.
Say, hey, you can't have
Joe.
This treatment.
Okay.
You can't have that treatment.
You know that doesn't happen in this bill. You know that, Joe, right?
Yes, it does. There's a limit on the amount that will be spent on people.
There isn't. There is no public option in this bill. There is no limit in this. In fact, what they've done is they've said that the private insurers cannot cut you off because you ran up the limit of how much they would pay you. They are helping you, Joe, and you are being conned by a bunch of snake oil salesmen who are getting you to vote against your own interests. Wake up, Joe. Jesus. I mean, people... You got a legitimate beef? Let's hear it. But Joe hasn't got a clue. He has been told over and over again that this is a government takeover of healthcare. And God, I wish that it was. But it's not. This is a gift, a kiss, a suck up to the private health insurance industry who is making billions on this. Joe, come on. Are you nuts? You want to beat up on Obama? I'm with you. There's plenty to beat up on him about, but don't make stuff up. I know you're not making it up. You're just saying what you were told to say. Max from Minnesota, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind, Max?
Well, first, please don't judge me because I'm from the same state that Michelle Bachmann is unfortunately from.
You're also the same state that Al Franken is from.
Very true, very right. true, whom I voted for. Right. Well, I just kind of wanted to talk about the whole Republican ideology about how the wealthy create jobs, and that was mainly the entire campaign trail for the Republicans in this last election for the House and the Senate,
right.
about how jobs. But I don't know how they can make do on those promises when they keep sending those jobs overseas
yep.
because they don't have to pay any sort of health care or anything to the employees over there.
Yep. No, that's right. They can't. And no, rich people, wealthy people do not create jobs. You have to have demand for there to be a job. They don't just go out because they're nice guys and start hiring people. There has to be demand. And if nobody can buy stuff, well, you got the score, Max. We need to get you down to Sparta, Tennessee, so you can talk some sense into Joe.
I bet you I could do it.
Well, all we can do is keep trying. Thanks for the call, Max. I do appreciate it. All right. Let me get to who do I got? Ron down in. There we go. Ron down in Prescott, Arizona. Welcome to the Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind, Ron?
Good evening, Brad. Do you think that the Chicago mob is in control of the White House, considering that Obama is from Illinois and Chicago? That Rahm Emanuel was a mover and shaker there, and he's going back to be the mayor. And the Bill Daley from the infamous Daley crime family is now chief of staff.
I have no evidence that the Chicago Mafia is involved with Barack Obama or anybody else. And if they are, I don't know about it. And all I report on is things that I have evidence for.
Yeah. Well, doesn't it seem like it, though? It could make people think that, don't you think?
The greatest mafia in the world is the corporate bosses who own these guys from top to bottom. They got a hell of a lot more money, and they threaten these guys a lot more than the mafia does. Thanks for the call, Ron.
I agree.
I got to run to a break here. Appreciate it. 877-520-1150. I will try to get to everyone's calls if I can. 877-520-1150. See, I was in a good mood tonight. It just got darker as the night went on. I promised you it was going to be, because last time, you know, last few times I've been into this show, they've been dark. We've been talking about torture and war and peace and all of this. And now I was in a good mood today. Thanks, Joe, for ruining it. Brad in for Mike Malloy. One more segment straight ahead. Stay with us. You mean we made it all the way through this and you screwed up that sound cue, Tony? Dang, put it back! It was me. It was my fault. Boy, a lot of these phone lines are lighting up with Idiot Joe. All right, we'll get to those in a second. My thanks tonight. Keep it playing. My thanks tonight to, of course, Tony Sorrentino, who didn't screw up that sound cue. I did. My thanks also to LA's K-Talk AM 1150 for hosting me here, and particularly at short notice. Our producer, call screener, and chat room hostess babe tonight, Desi Doyen. Thank you, Des. And, of course, to Mike and Kathy Malloy for
get me the hell out of my house for a change. Hope you're feeling better soon, Mike. He'll be resting up again tomorrow. So I'll be with you again. Don't worry. Be happy. And he'll be back on Monday. If you're listening on MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. Let's go to Sam in Los Angeles. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey there, Brad. How you doing?
I'm okay.
Well, I tell you, there's almost a formula with these guys. The first sentence they say, like Joe,
yeah,
is snark.
Yeah.
And they know nothing. War and Peace, did he read War and Peace? If he did, he wouldn't be a Republican, probably.
Well, and if he did, that's what Michael Steele said the other day during the debate, was his favorite book, War and Peace. And then he quoted it by saying, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Charles Dickens, I'm
yes,
sorry.
It's the wrong book.
Which is one of my favorites.
So,
what is that one?
Which one? Tale of Two Cities.
Tale of Two Cities.
And
exactly.
You know what? Tony here, during the break, he made a good point. Do you want to say it on air? Or do you want me to say it? Because you never come on. You want to say it? You like a long. You have no problem with a law that is 2,700 pages, right?
Exactly.
What did you say about it?
I want it long and complex because that means it's covering enough things and all the contingencies. And
yes.
No, I don't want a thing that's only a page long and that's it. No, that's no good.
It's no good. It should cover what it's supposed to cover. So the length of a bill has nothing to do with whether it's good or not. And by the way, I don't know that if the guy wanted to make an argument that it's not good, he could have. But clearly he knows nothing about the bill other than what's been repeated to him.
The straw through the skull, yep. And the sucking of the brains, you know.
Thanks, Sam. I gotta get to, I want to try to get as many folks as I can. I appreciate
Absolutely.
Your call. Have a good night,
you.
Sir.
Bye-bye.
All right, let me get to, Mike in Chicago, since we've been, some people, not me, have been beating up on Chicago. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show. What's up?
Hey, Brad. This is also the show. I lost a job about a year and a half ago. I was I didn't have insurance for a year. I got a new job. I had to wait 90 days before I could get that, and my only choice was getting it from Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina. I live in Illinois. I work in Indiana. My insurance is and my company is out of South Carolina. And then about a couple weeks after I signed up for the insurance, which, mm-hmm. by the way, has a $4,000 deductible.
Yeah.
I don't make enough money to afford
to cover the deductible. No, I hear you.
The insurance anyway.
I hear you, Mike.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield was nice enough to send me a nice 8.5 by 11 inch booklet, 65 pages of all their rules and stuff like that on what they cover, what they don't cover, all the other rules. So if you got Blue Cross and Blue Shield of South Carolina and the other 50 states, and you got all these other insurance companies in all these other 50 states, no wonder the bill had to be 2,700 pages long. Just like the previous caller said, it had to cover everything.
I appreciate that. Thanks for the call, Mike. And no, that actually wasn't the previous caller. That was our engineer, Tony, who made a good point, as he always does. But normally he doesn't let you listen. He won't come on. In the chat room, someone said, and I'm sorry I missed who it was, said that if no one could possibly read the 2,700-page bill for health care, how do they know what's in it? Where do they get their info? How do they know how bad it is if they haven't read it? Good Lord. All right. I know. I don't have enough time. Nora, can you... Nora, last time you called, I didn't give you nearly enough time, and I'm doing it again tonight. Can you call back tomorrow and I'll give you proper time for a change, Nora?
Should I just make my briefest announcement?
Do it.
That I'm calling about, and that is on September 25th, these people, the affected, that the FBI have now re-subpoenaed here in Minneapolis and Chicago, and the next grand jury is on Monday, January 25th. Here in Minneapolis, it's going to be at the Federal Building, 4:30 to 5:30.
Where can people go for more info? Give me a website, quick.
FBI.net, and it's in a whole bunch of cities, and everyone, please, it could be any single one of us. It could be you or Mike and Kathy or me, and they're standing up to the FBI and saying no, and they're not going to their grand juries, and it's going to be protests everywhere across the nation.
Way to go, Nora. StopFBI.net. You got it all in. I do appreciate that and the good work you're doing. We'll see you tomorrow night. Brad Friedman in for Malloy.